Accession number 13359, Mr. George Richardson, reel 13.
Mr. G.S. Richardson, reel 13. You go back to the Alamein positions, Mr. Richardson. What state was the battalion and your own unit in?
Well, we were all mixed up with all kinds of different units that had been coming back. We couldn't see any semblance of any order at all in what was going to be a static major defence position eventually, but at that time there was all kinds of troops swanning about. We had a job to find our own military police who could direct us, and they were divisional military police, and they sent us to report to an area. We reported there. The RSM to give them names, people who were with him. Then they sent us to report to where our division, where our battalion had to form. And when we eventually got there, we found the clerks, the base loan people who had our records with our rare stuff that we left with them, great coats and such like. They were all there, reported in. Each had to report himself to the orderly sergeant, give his name and number, and exactly where we'd been, what had happened on the road back. And that was all written down into the diaries, I suppose, of the battalion. And we just hung around there waiting, and it was a few days before we knew just how strong our battalion was, or well, I should say how weak our battalion was, because we didn't have any signal officer or signal sergeant. Corporal Dawes had come along with us, so he assumed the position of signal sergeant. I was a corporal. Lance Corporal, I think he was Lance Corporal Six Smith, and Jimmy Weir, Hubert Latham, I think Harry Bell, yes. I think there were about maybe seven or eight signalers with the RSM, and one or two more of the headquarters people, the headquarters clerks and that. I'd been up in the line, and we'd come back. Around about 20 of us had assembled, and when we, it was quite some time before other signalers reported in from the companies that they'd been with, and we found we only had about half a platoon strong after some 4 or 5 days. During this time, troops were all swanning forward making static positions. The Germans had been advancing and found out that strong lines had been made, and they're coming to positions where they found out that they had a fight to go forward instead of rushing forward the way they had been. Found that they were coming to static defence positions again.
You lost, obviously, a lot of your friends and comrades.
Yes.
What kind of feeling does that leave you with?
Well, we wondered what had happened to them, whether they'd been killed or captured. We were sorry because we had spent most of our life, our last few years, with them men, living and chatting and joking and marching with. And we were thankful for that. We were there, okay, and wondered what had happened to them. But I don't think I ever really felt any grief. We were hoping that our signal officer being captured left end hulls. We lost quite a lot of our infantry troops, but it was marvellous how many had got back. I think myself, out of maybe 700 men that had left the Gazala line, I think that would be around about the strength of us. I think a 4 battalion in action, 700. I think we'd probably maybe 450 or 500 would finish up assembled again. But I think we were a lot better off than the 9th battalion, and probably about the same as the 8th battalion. I know the 9th battalion suffered a lot worse fate than us. They'd gone into a big action above Mersimer Trail. They had run really into Panzers and mostly killed, I suppose. But we reformed and went back.
Where were you getting your drafts from?
Well, we weren't getting anybody then. It was a week or two, getting probably towards the end of June. We found ourselves a few miles outside of Alexandria. I remember RSM Page told us that we were going to Alexandria that night, and to be careful what we drank and what when we went with, because we hadn't seen any kind of life like that for a long time, and told us to report back, go out and have a good time. More or less, told us to go out and get ourselves a woman, have a good time, come back, get some venom out of our systems.
Is that an important thing to be able to do, to go and, in effect, release these tensions in that way?
Oh, I think so. I remember we had one, I don't know whether this is going to be allowed to be taped, but we had one man in our platoon up in the Gazala line, and he'd reported sick. He'd had a permanent stand that he couldn't get rid of nowhere. He reported sick, and they had a conference about him. The result, he got 48 days taken back to back to Cairo. 48 hours leave, back to Cairo, and came back to the line as fit as a lump. So, yeah, I think the British Army thought, well, okay, you're fighting men, and we don't want you to go out raping women, anything like that. And I don't think that anything like that happened with our men. They looked at us that way. The MO was a very wise bloke, and I think our MO, I think he survived, and I think the Padre survived. No, I think the Padre was taken prison along with a lot more of the battalion strength, the battalion headquarters strength.
Who was MO at this time?
Oh, I can't remember his name. But no, I can't remember. But when I was up in Iraq, I got stung by a scorpion, and that scar's still there. I think you, John, and he pierced and took all the blood out and left the scar. The yellow scorpion, not a black one. Anyway, we more or less got troops sent up. Our Corporal Dawes was promoted to be single sergeant. He was the only one with stripes, with three stripes and his cross flags above his stripes. All the rest of our NCOs had stripes on our cross flags on our left arm. We just done signal courses, not professional courses to be trainers, instructors. That's right, instructors' flags. So, I was a full corporal. He was a mid sergeant. We had a bit of a duffy where we moved just up behind the line, and In one air attack, Sergeant Dawes was hit by a piece of aircraft shrapnel. Come down, hit him on the shoulder. He spent a lot of time, must have spent about 20 years in the regular army. He was about, plus his army, his war service. He went back wounded and left me the senior NCO. And I was taken over the assumption we didn't have a single officer. I was taken over the run of the single battalion, what was remaining. I think there was only about 20 of us left out of the original 30 of us. We got some sent up from the base, and then we got sergeant. Well, he came up as corporal and promoted to be signal sergeant when Dawes was gone. He had his instructor's flags on his right arm, and he took over the single battalion.
What was his name?
Teague. Sergeant Teague. I think he got another medal in Normandy.
Where were the drafts coming from? Were they all Durham Light Infantry?
Well, we got a few that had been trained by the Durhams, but they were mostly troops from the south of England. Got quite a few deployed. Sergeant Teague himself was, he had a London accent. I don't know what part of London, but he always appeared to me, he was brown like everybody else was, but when he come back to England, he was still brown. whether he was or not, I don't know, or whether he kept his suntan longer than the rest of it, I don't know. But I was a bit jealous of him all the way through, because I thought, well, I should have been signal sergeant. I took over the job of signal officer for a while. But anyway, we got up to strength and got together, and there was a signal officer came up, and he stuck with us for the rest of the war, and I can't for life think of his name, but he was already full lieutenant when he joined us, and he'd been with another regiment and as a signal officer, and he took over. I think it was from the Essex. The 44th Division had had a duffing in the desert, and quite a lot of them had been mopped up. They'd let the Germans throw onto our flank, and we didn't think much of that division at that time. Us and they had been running and fighting, and then they'd let the Germans in. While we were in this position behind the lines, they'll keep sending fighting strength forward. They sent some of us back to guard South African Air Force camps to do perimeter guard duties. Some of us were sent in with company strong little duffies to capture maybe it's just 100 yards of the line. We're trying to get the aluminium line so that we had overlooking hills. Instead of the Germans overlooking us, we had to be on the high ground with volley between us. And I went up in one or two of these. Usually the troops went in and run forward and gained the ground at that and dug in without much loss. Small actions like that. And then when we got dug in, other troops would move in, New Zealanders or somebody else would move in and take over our position, and then our troops would come back. We were on this kind of action, all our brigade, for a few weeks, while we were still trying to reassemble the battalion together.
What was your job on these occasions?
Well, on two occasions I went up as an infantryman, fixed bayonets and charging and running and then digging in. But they got together a composite battalion with our Colonel Battiscombe, some of our trained troops, not the ones we just got, some of them that had been in action, All drills are being actioned from all the three battalions, with officers from other battalions taken over platoon strengths. And we went into this charge. Now, I went up with I went up as a signaller. There's only two of us went up with wireless sets. One behind, and I was forward. And in this action, it took about 2 hours of advance and charge, and I've never heard troops that were bayoneting. I was firing everything I had. I had a revolver, I had my wireless, and I was passing messages back to the wireless, the main wireless which was behind, and but in the action there was a bit of a disorder, and we were surrounded a lot, and I finished up with a platoon officer, and we dug in. The next day we were relieved. We found out that most of our troops had been killed or captured, including our CO. Apparently, when we got into our position, we were supposed to have had an artillery bombardment in front of us, and there's no artillery bombardment put down. I think there was about 3 guns fired.
Did you have any tank support?
No, none at all. It was just an infantry charge. It was one, I think we had to go about 1,000 yards. It was one of the biggest charges. It was to capture an escarpment to straighten out the line, and it was a terrible action. I think it was ill-prepared, and we lost a lot of troops needlessly that went in bayonet actions.
And what were you seeing in that action?
The lads are screaming, blood curdling. I could never forget that, the sound of our lads bayoneting Germans the way they were. And it was Germans, not Italians, that we were up against. Oh, the heck, I'll get out of that action, I'll never know. It's one of them actions that I went and I come out with me wireless. Where other actions I've, when I've found out that I'd done my job and I wasn't in communication with anybody, I've ditched the wireless and got back. But that one, I come out with me wireless.
Was it your role to stay with the commanding officer?
I think the trouble with Colonel Battiscombe is that he was never used to giving orders direct to the signalers. The adjutant used to, and company commanders were to send messages to company headquarters, but himself to communicate backwards, he didn't. I think myself that in that action, he must have gotten 200 or 300 yards to the right and to advance of me, because that's where most of the men were captured or killed. And when we dug in and stayed dug over until troops came up to relieve us, and the wounded and that were taken back, and there's quite a lot of them were taken prisoner, including, I think, Colonel Battiscombe.
Going into the action, how were the troops moving? Was it just one or was it
line?
Leapfrogging?
Oh, no. As far as I know, it was a battalion advance on a short front, probably about 300 or 400 yard front, advancing because we wanted a unit. We wanted in companies or platoons. We were in one big, massive unit just going forward. When we had orders to go forward and dig in at our final position to hold that line until we were relieved. That was our orders we'd gone in with. And how I'd come separated from Colonel Battiscombe, I don't know. But I think myself that if I had been with Colonel Battiscombe, I probably would have been prisoner with him. So how I'd come separated from him, I don't know. But I'd been sent forward with him. So, but I dug in with an officer that was in command of some of them, and I don't think it was a 6th battalion officer, I think it was an 8th battalion officer, that we had about a couple of dozen strong that finally got this position in Dugain. And we were at our position where we were supposed to be. But my wireless wasn't in communication with anybody. What had happened to the wireless behind us, I don't know, but he'd gone out of action.
Not getting the artillery support you expected, or the tank support, and losing so many men who'd already had battle experience in a battalion that was pretty well decimated, or a brigade, what were the feelings of those that survived it towards whoever gave the orders?
Well, we couldn't understand it because I mean, it was more or less what we'd envisaged the First World War, where they just went forward in block to be mown down, and then somebody else would come forward in over the top and take up our positions. But that's what we felt like, as though we'd just been sent forward as gun fodder. And how I got out of that alive, I don't know. I'll never know. The same in our advance later on in Al Alamein. I'll never know how I come through that one. The stuff that was flying around me, just missing me. Later on up in the Marath line, how I came through there. And I finished up in front of our lines. I finished up 500 yards in enemy positions in front of an enemy minefield with only about 70 of us left, mostly 8 battalion. How I finished up there with the wireless, that I'll never know. But that's a later battle.
So you were then withdrawn from that position.
Yes, now, our positions were relayed by other troops.
When you come out of an action, what's the first desire you have? Is it sleep, fatigue?
Well, we're absolutely fatigued, yes. But we're also shaken. Not immediately after, when we got back to safety, to our own lines, then all you could do was just lie and sob to yourself. Sob to yourself and think of all the men that you'd seen killed around you and wonder how long he's come to be one of them that was left. And it's a funny feeling. Unless you've been in it, you can't really tell. But I know other men's told me that they felt exactly the same as this. They said the reaction sets in about 48 hours after, but I think with me, it was usually about 24 hours after. Because it was the blood-curdling yells of our men shoving bayonets into men. Oh, terrible. I had a revolver, so, you know, I'll just find a way at anything I saw. I don't know. And close combat like that. That was the first, really, except for going through the Italian lines, that was the first really close combat with Germans I'd ever done. And it was blood-curdling and frightening, because you're all steamed up. I don't think we're even given a rum ration on that action, where most of the actions were. But we weren't given any rum ration there. I just went in absolutely cold, stark, naked, not knowing what we're going to meet.
How does rum help you?
Just gives you a feeling that you're all right. Look at everybody else, I'm okay, Jack.
Have you seen men, experienced men who've gone in a sense of intoxication?
Oh no. I mean, rum only elated you. You took, and the rum rations that we got was the stuff that the Royal Navy used to get, really black, thick rum, probably 90 degree stuff. And when they gave us, it wouldn't be a tot, it would be a double tot, and before we went into action. Or like when we went into Sicily, we just passed the bottles down each side and pass them back, you know, like that. And I happened to be at the back of the ship and had about that much to finish. So that was the only time I was sick. And I drank that down and brought it all back into the spiel bag. Felt a lot better for it, though.
Do you feel anger, or do you look for anyone to feel angry about or with when you've seen men in an action which you felt went all wrong?
Well, no. I've never felt that way. I was looked around to see who was left, and thank God that I was one of them. But on the whole, we used to think, well, that was a stupid action. I hope I haven't got to come any more like that. Because, you know, there didn't seem to be taking any records of how many of these little duffies I went into. I think I must have looked, oh, he's a good book, send him in, he'll get back out again. Over and over and over again, I've told my singer that I went in, don't worry, we'll get back out. I told that to Smudger Smith two or three times when I went in normally. Anyway, that was one big battle that we did. And then they brought this back and allowed us some rest where we could go down. Wagons would take us down to Alexandria and get a few beers and egg and chips and things like that. That was one of the things that we were being looking forward to when we got back, was seeing running water, being able to wash ourselves down, get ourselves as much water as we could drink after that long, grueling drive back down the desert. I don't know if this has ever been said before, but after we'd broken out, and the first time that we assembled as a battalion, the CO, on the CO's orders, issued an order that no officer or man would shear forthwith. This was because our water supplies were unlimited. We didn't know when we were going to get the next bottle full of water. So rather than have anybody disobeying orders by not shaving, he made an order that no man will shear forthwith. And using instrument incident came out after this. After we'd got back out, after the Duffy's in Alamein, this corporal, one of the infantry corporals that had been through all the action up to then, even Dunkirk, went on guard duty with a beard. Quite a good, strong beard. His platoon officer had gone out of action, and he was in charge, I think. Anyway, he'd gone on guard commander, and the duty officer came up and put him on charge for being unshaven. So he went up to commanding officer, because he was an NCO, and the commanding officer, and I think it must have been Sammy Watson, asked him why he's on parade unshaven. So how he picked the battalion orders, I don't know, but there it was. No officer or man. He says, I'm afraid that you're all out of order. You're all shaven. I'm not. You're the only ones that disobey orders. And you had to be let off the charge. And so there had to be a new order issued. From this day forth, all men of the Derelict Infantry will shave. Have you ever heard that one before? It's true. And somewhere in our battalion history, that will be, because it was in battalion orders.
Who took command when Batiscombe was taken?
Well, I think the adjutant took over first. Major Owen was one of the senior company commanders. He'd come back with us, with the RSM, for RSM Paget had got killed in that latter part when. Did he get killed? Well, after all our losses and promotions, we had a new commanding officer who had been headquarters company commander when I first joined 6th Battalion, Major Watson. He'd been Captain Watson back in Willenden, and Major Watson, and he became Lieutenant Colonel Sammy Watson, and he became our CO. From then on until we went into action in Sicily. He was our CEO when we were next put into the Alamein line.
But what time did you move into the Alamein line?
I think it must have been early October. Early October we went into the south end of the line. We took over where Murray's had had an action, because there was, as a matter of fact, I've still got a blooming Maori dagger in there. I've often been going to dig hole and bury it, because It's against the law to have something like that. Anyway, I picked this up, and we went into this end of the line. There wasn't a lot of action, except that we sent quite a lot of patrols out at night. There was a valley between us and the German lines, and our patrols could roam more or less up and down these, but often bumped into German patrols up and down this valley between us and the German main lines, which were only, I would say, less than a mile from our line. There was no big distance between our line and the German lines at that action. I remember there was one nightly action where a platoon had been out and bumped into some trouble, and there was one or two wounded. Our troops had been left wounded, and the platoon had got back, patrol had got back, and an ambulance driver, REMC, volunteered to go through and pick them up. And him and a couple of attendants from the REMC went out and brought them back.